What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Rummy and Ray Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Summerlin, and I'm joined, as I am every week, by the very best in the business, Mr. Rumford Johnny. What's up, Johnny?
Not much, Raymond. How'd you do this week, buddy?
I did pretty good. My cash lineup hit. It got to 140, which is kind of that number I'm shooting for on FanDuel. If you can get to 140, you're probably going to do pretty good. Cash game hit, cash in some tournaments. You know, can't beat that.
Exactly.
How about you?
I did really well, actually. I had an excellent week. Probably my best week so far, and it was pretty interesting. I know that you're a big head-to-head cash guy.
Yeah.
I am actually more inclined to do more 50-50s. Which is like really what I like to do and spread my money out a little bit. I just find that I am always able to sort of primarily get into that top 50 percentile and or the top half of the scoring and able to cash each week. I mean, I've never really found myself on the bottom, you know, edge of that top half of the 50-50. So I feel really comfortable with that. So basically, the last several weeks, I've done more 50-50s than anything else. I've kind of moved away from head-to-heads, and I feel really strongly about that. Something else that I've done recently, and I just kind of tried it out. I mean, because it was something that I hadn't really thought of before to kind of play, and I know, you know, I talked to a bunch of sharps recently about it, and they said they don't really like to do it, but something that I just tried out this past week was the Monday Night Football Thursday slate, which is basically the Monday Night Football game from 1 week and then the Thursday Night Football game from the next week. So basically it's just a two game slate, and you're looking at a 14 pool of talent. So what it does is it really creates a lot of, you know, multiple splits, meaning you know, several people will split a prize because their lineups are probably very, very similar. An example is, and I know I shared this with you already this past week, I did really well. I think I placed eighth overall in a pretty big tournament, and I ended up splitting that prize, which was a $5,000 prize, with 15 people. So while it seems crazy, it's like, man, with a few more points, I mean, literally, I had fewer points, than the person who won the whole damn thing, which is crazy. That's how close you are. And it seems insane. Like, well, you know, it's kind of a jip, and, you know, you're doing that to yourself because it's so, like, fractions of a point. But the reality is that, you know, I still, for a $3 buy-in, I still, you know, made $330. So, you know, that's pretty great, you know, for me. So to try something like that, whereas most tournaments, like in a millionaire maker or even, you know, one of the $1 million prizes on tournaments on FanDuel, you know, maybe you'll make $40, you know, maybe you'll make 150 if you're lucky. And sometimes you'll cash really high. I mean, if you really, really, you put in that perfect lineup, but it's really hard to cash high in tournaments. It really is. It's difficult. It's one of those, it's a rare thing. And for me, when you're able to do this on your first try, it's enticing. So obviously this week I'm kind of looking at those situations on a lot of those different slates and trying some things out. And I think, you know, I'll continue to keep doing that, because I do think that a lot of people who are, you know, a lot of the sharps really kind of stay away from that because they feel like, you know, why split that prize up, you know, 15, 20 ways? And they avoid those. And I think that it's also a narrower pool. I mean, where there's very little differentiation between different lineups. But I think it's a lot of fun. And I do think that it's interesting. It's a different way to look at things. And for me, you know, like an example this week, you know, it's the Thursday night game is Seattle and San Francisco, which I didn't really want a big part of that. So I primarily, my lineup was mostly the Giants and Eagles game. So most of my plays were from that. And I think the way it's shaping up, I'm still going to cash pretty highly because the way I'm placing right now, while still having only two players playing on, you know, Thursday night, I'm shaping up to actually cash yet again and cash pretty highly because of the way it's shaping up right now when I look at all of the rest of the places in that current tournament. So for me, I just think it's interesting. It's a different way to look at it. You know, again, it's a much smaller pool. It requires you to throw more darts, like bullseye darts, than anything else. So it's a sort of a different degree of difficulty. I think it's pretty compelling, and you know, I enjoy it. Anytime you hit, dude, it's like, you know, you're excited for the next one. So so I think it's pretty cool. I think it's something that if you're new to sort of DFS and you're worried about spending a lot in the big tournaments, something like this with a $3 buy-in, you know, you could find yourself doing pretty well if you really do the research and work hard at it.
Yeah, I think the Monday Thursday games, I don't play them. I haven't really played them except in different situations. I actually played it this week because I actually thought that this week, and I think that other weeks, there will be some interesting kind of contrarian game theory options to play, because I imagine most weeks, just from my kind of reading of the situation, I would imagine that most weeks the Monday night game is going to have a lot heavier ownership than the Thursday night game.
Yeah, I agree.
Just because that's how people think. And, you know, we see that with the Thursday, Sunday games too. And then the other thing I would say is, especially weeks like this, when the Thursday night game is not particularly appealing, we're talking about Seattle and San Francisco,
you're definitely
going to have a big ownership. And so like this week, I did enter a lineup, and it's pretty Seattle-San Francisco heavy. It's actually Seattle-heavy.
I figured it would be, yeah.
It's not even San Francisco. I don't even have San Francisco, but I have, I believe, four Seattle players. So,
wow. Yeah.
So that kind of worked out for me because the Monday night game was such a kind of dumpster fire. Mm-hmm. So if you go in and you
– So let me guess. Let me take a little stab at this. So you got Graham. You got Russell.
That's right.
And you've got Lynch.
That's right.
And Baldwin.
Nope. Seattle defense.
Oh, nice. Okay. There you go.
But that
goes against your better judgment, right? Now, this is in San Francisco?
Yeah, so I don't really like that, but you only had four defenses to pick from. So,
right, gotcha.
And not picking San Francisco.
Well, you know.
But it should have been the Eagles. That was the play.
That was my play.
Yeah, so. That's nice. But it kind of gives an interesting – I think it gives an interesting kind of game theory opportunity. So
yep, it does.
I'm going to start playing it a little more. I do think it's a little bit interesting and allow me to get into the Thursday games because, you know, I never have a piece of them ever.
Exactly, right. So, yeah, exactly. And that's another way to look at it. I mean, it made Monday exciting for me for more than one reason, because a lot of times, you know, I love to have a little piece of the Monday night game in my regular, you know, 50-50s or even tournament lineups, because it makes, you know, for an exciting play. And obviously if you're doing really well, it kind of helps put you over in the money and, you know, makes the end of the week really exciting for you. But also now doing this where it kind of carries over into the Thursday game, you know, it's even more fun. So yeah, certainly makes it really, really exciting.
I want to take a quick break to talk about our sponsor, Fantasy Pros, and their My Playbook service, which offers fantasy advice tailored to your specific team. The Playbook Start Sit Assistance makes lineup recommendations based on the weekly rankings of your favorite fantasy experts. The Waiver Assistant scours your league's wire to find the best ads both for this week and the rest of the season. And the Trade Finder helps you locate the most valuable assets to target. Use a link on our homepage, rummyandray.blogspot.com, to get started. Now, back to the show. All right, so let's get to the games. As always, talk the five highest totals and then some stacks. that are on stacks, and then some bits of contrarian play. So let's do it. The first game of the week is New Orleans at Indianapolis. Indianapolis is a 4.5-point home favorite. Although this line, if you look some places, it's at 5. I've seen some places where it's lower. This line's kind of moved all over the place. So ESPN's Pick Center said that it was at 6 at one point in time on Tuesday and is coming down. Nobody, the public's kind of all over the place on this as well. 57% of the money's on Indianapolis. So it's almost a 50-50 split. So it's kind of a crazy game. Indianapolis has an individual team total of 28.25. New Orleans is 23.75. So I guess we're going to get started. You know, this game has a much higher total, 4 points higher than any other game. So it's definitely going to have a lot of play. And so I guess the question becomes, you know, who do you play out of it? And are there any tournament plays in a game that has this high of a total is probably going to have decently high ownerships?
You know, I don't really know. I would say this. I think Drew Brees is probably not going to be super highly owned.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
And his price isn't really, I mean, I think there are going to be other people that are going to be on other plays this week, much higher. Obviously, if you compare him to Luck, you know, Luck's price is still a little higher than his, correct?
Luck is 500 more on FanDuel. So Drew Brees is much higher priced than I thought he would be. Mm-hmm. He's quarterback 4 at 8,400 on FanDuel, and Luck is quarterback 2 at 8,900. So
I'd say I feel more confident about Brees, you know, strangely, even though it's at home and it's you know, in Indy. For Luck, I think Brees is probably going to be underowned. I think he's probably a good play. You know, I'm not chasing the Ben Watson points, although I will say I won money on that slate that we just talked
Ben
about.
Ben Watson did it for you, right?
$2,500 he fit into my lineup. I said, it's got to be. He literally, I think he was almost 0% owned. Like, he was so, like, nobody had him in this tournament. Like, he was, I mean, it was like maybe me and like 5 other people. And it was, you know, that's really what kind of pushed me over the top and had me at one point in third place and then ultimately down to eighth place. But yeah, I mean, I think I don't chase those points this week. I think, you know, there's probably something to be said for the fact that at least he was fed so much. And it's probably not a bad matchup for him.
But that I have to think that was just a matchup. I mean, we've seen that defense. You know, Dan Quinn comes from Seattle. We've seen that defense now really, really struggle against tight ends, both in Seattle and in Atlanta. So I think that that's just one of those things where the scheme to beat those defenses, to beat Atlanta, beat Seattle, is to just hit the tight end. I can't imagine they come back to it again.
And they were beating him, like, they were beating them over the middle and stuff with, I mean, they were using all different types of routes for Watson, and it was just perfect mismatch situation. So yeah, I don't see that happening. I think, you know, I'm fine with a Snead and Breeze stack if you want to go that way. I think that Snead's probably not going to see Vontae Davis all that much, and that's really good for him. I think he's going to be targeted a lot in this game, and I think that, you know, he'll have a little bit more of a bounce back. He had kind of, I want to say disappointing game, but he had kind of somewhat of a letdown game last week, and I think this week he bounces back a little bit. Moncrief still is ridiculously cheap, especially on DraftKings.
That's my number one play of this.
Yeah, $5,200. I mean, I think he's that guy. I mean, you know, there are several wide receivers who kind of fit this mold to me that are the, you know, number, or they're the 1As, you know, or maybe they're the one in disguise as a 1A, 1B, that, you know, every week are just going to be ridiculous values and they're not going to catch up. And I think Moncrief is one, Decker is another, and there's other guys that fall into that category just in that pricing range where you just, it's silly not to play them, especially in a matchup like this. So I love Moncrief. I would steer away from Andrew Luck. I think there's just sort of that, you know, he could have a high, but he'd also have like a game where there's just enough damage done from him that negates some of his scoring. I'm more inclined to just look at his weapons as opposed to him. And Moncrief to me is probably like the best play, and maybe for me, probably my only play in this matchup on the indie side. I'm not really, you know, it's a good matchup for Gore, but I just think his where he's priced, there's some better options, you know, that are really in his range within a few hundred bucks of him that I like a lot more, and we'll get to that. So for me, it's really about Moncrief. I mean, that's the buy. I think he will be pretty highly owned in this matchup.
Agree. I agree that he's going to be highly owned. And so I don't know if he's a tournament play,
yeah.
But in a cash game,
yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at what he does with luck. He has three more targets a game with luck this year than with Hasselbeck. And it's not like they throw more with luck. I mean, they've attempted three more passes a game, but that's not all the targets. You know, Andre Johnson sees a lot less targets seen a lot less targets with luck. Luck didn't look healthy last week. He sailed all those passes and he held the ball too long, which is something I'd hoped that he would have seen Hasselbeck and the success he had, but they still managed to protect him, you know, okay. And so I actually kind of like luck a little bit if he's low owned in a tournament. You know, I'll look at the Thursday ownership percentages and I'll make my decisions then. If he's low owned, I'd be okay with the tournament. I'm not playing him in cash. I'm not paying that price for a guy.
Yeah, it's 70. I mean, on DraftKings, he's 7,600.
Yeah, he's 8,900. I'm not paying that price for a guy in a cash game. But, you know, it might come down to kind of, like I said, ownership. If he's just super low owned, he has that ceiling. And that's kind of what I said about him last week. And it worked out. He has that three touchdowns, even when he's not playing well because of all his guys. But Moncrief I like. And I kind of can see a argument for Frank Gore simply because I worry about game flow in that Ahmad Bradshaw played 19 snaps 5 days after he signed with the team. And so you can imagine that that's going to grow. And I would think that Bradshaw becomes kind of the passing down back. So in games they're going to maybe lose, you don't want to touch Frank Gore.
Right.
But this game, I think they're probably going to win.
Really?
And so, I think they win this game. I mean, okay. I don't think New Orleans is good. And I think their defense is just trash.
Yeah, no, I know. It just feels like it's – I mean – I don't know. I think you're probably right. I think they do win this game, but I could certainly see like them, you know, bumbling this one. I could certainly see them like, you know, New Orleans playing a back and forth type of a game, you know, that where they're scoring points against each other. And, you know, this sort of being a game where Drew Brees kind of pulls one out of a rabbit out of the hat, if you will, and ices this one. So, but yeah, I could see what you're saying. And that's kind of more important to the whole argument about Gore. I think you're right. I think this is a game that will be close. And I think that does kind of bode poorly for Gore. I do think Bradshaw, like you said, 19 snaps. I mean, I think that's probably, you know, honestly doubled, but it's probably close to that this week. I mean, you could see him probably going up to like 30 plus, which is, you know, not good, you know, for Gore. So,
yeah, I think it's going to be a game by game thing with that. I really think that I think Gore is still the definite lead back whenever they're winning, you know, and he showed last week. He only got 13 carries. I think it was 13 last week, but he averaged 6 yards a carry. He was cutting through that defense.
Yeah, he looked good.
But it's all about if he's going to get the snaps in passing game. So I think that, and this isn't even really about this game, this is just about the future with Gore. If we're projecting Gore in the future, I think what we have to do is make an assumption about what we think the game script is going to be.
Right.
And if they're on the road and they're underdogs, I'm not touching Frank Gore. At home, as a pretty decent, I mean, they're over a field goal favorite at home.
Okay.
I'm kind of okay with it. I'm not beating down the door to get Frank Gore in my lineup, but I'm saying that I think that he'll return value at where he is.
That's fair. And I think he's probably going to be to your argument, I think he's probably going to be a little underowned. I think there's more there are more people that are going to be more chalky this week. I think Gurley's going to be really chalky this week.
That's actually my argument against Mark Ingram on the other side is I'm not sure why you would pay $200 more to put Mark Ingram in your lineup than have Todd Gurley in your lineup.
Yeah, and on DraftKings he's 1,300 more than Todd Gurley.
1,300 more.
Yes, sir.
Oh my goodness.
So for me, I mean, because again, DraftKings is a little slow to matriculate in terms of pricing. So You know, that's why
That's a bad, bad price. Gurley's what, 5,000 over there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That is a terrible price.
I know.
Do you think over under 50%? Like, I'm not even making a joke here. Legitimately, in the Millionaire Maker, over under 50% Gurley.
Pretty close. It's gonna be 40 to 55%, and somewhere in that range. Yeah,
which that's crazy. I mean, like when you're talking about the high owned guys, we're talking about 30% at the top.
Every milli has some chalk. You know, every milli lineup has some chalk, and if you're gonna have chalk, you're gonna have chalk for a guy that you know is gonna be fed in a matchup that's like perfect to be fed in, and. You know, again, he could come out in this game and just have an enormous game at that price. You know, where there are people that were like so down on AP this week or last week. Well, they were high on AP last week are going to say, well, the public is going to be down on AP and they're going to go back to AP because the public will be down on him and he'll be underowned. But I'd rather not risk AP again. And take that chance. I didn't have hardly any ownership on AP this past week. I kind of pivoted away from him. But I think people are going to go back to him because they feel that the ownership will be pretty low because people will be pissed off. But I think doing that is kind of outsmarting yourself. You know, I'd rather have some of that chalk of Gurley. And especially, obviously, in cash, you're going to have him in your lineup anyway.
Oh, no. He is a cash game must.
Yeah, absolutely. And
we'll get to the quarterback and tight end you definitely have to have in your cash
game. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll build half your cash game lineup tonight.
Yeah,
don't worry about
that. Yeah, we will. But I do think, you know, again, like I tweeted this out a couple of days ago. How many times Devonta Freeman's been in the Millionaire Maker lineups? I mean, just you can't keep just saying, well, because of ownership, I'm going to fade. Sometimes things are just set up for you to take some of that chalk. You can get contrarian elsewhere. You know, if you have three or four different contrarian plays in your lineup, that's fine. If you're going Todd Gurley and DeAndre Hopkins, and then you're adding some, you know, contrarian here and there, that's fine. I mean, you don't have to go completely contrarian. I mean, or like, you know, 60% contrarian. You could go 50% or even less than that. You know, I mean, that's fine. I mean, because listen, in a GPP, you're still going to cash. Sometimes it's just smart to play the chalk and then build around the chalk. You know, that's what I always do. I always start with chalk. And I build around it and try to see, well, look at the ownerships and then figure out in my head, how do I feel about this matchup? Where do I think this is really a play that's going to – people are going to be off this player. Look at last week. Anytime anybody was like a late, you know, sort of a late in the week sort of decision, we saw guys like Alshon Jeffrey and Steve Smith. Those guys were in those lineups, you know, and – that helps. So some of those types of moves are going to help you where people, you know, set their lineups way early and were worried about some of these guys that were dinged up and then didn't touch them. And those are some of the guys that are going to help you, you know, win in those big tournaments. So that's kind of the way you have to think, but don't push away from the chalk completely just because of that. I mean, you burn yourself. I mean, in that lineup I was just talking about, I had Freeman in that lineup. It just so happens to be that he played on the Thursday night, and he was my running back, you know, and 38 points later, I mean, you're going to kick that to the curb. It doesn't make any sense. So just, you know, don't try to be contrarian to be contrarian. Sometimes the ideal situation, the way they're being utilized, the matchup all speaks to take the chalk, you know what I mean? And build around it and then be contrarian around the chalk. And that's worked for me, especially as of late. So.
I think that Todd Gurley, Devonta Freeman cash game, like that's
– oh, my God.
Oh, beautiful. Anyway, all right, let's move on to the next game. Yeah, Baltimore at Arizona. This is a Monday night football game. Arizona's 8.5-point home favorites, although I've seen 10 places, and I think that it's moving Arizona's way very quickly. And now it's not a reverse movement. 70% of the bets are on Arizona, so I think this might be one of those weird games. But it seems like from what I've seen, Vegas Insider still has it at 8.5, but ESPN's Pick Center says that it's moving. So we'll keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on that throughout the week. Arizona's 28.25. That's their team total. It's the same as Indianapolis. Baltimore's 19.75. So this is going to be an interesting game, because if there's one thing I know about fantasy football, it's that you should start quarterbacks against Baltimore. And mm-hmm. So I guess the question becomes, is Carson Palmer too chalky to start in a tournament?
No. I think that, you know, you certainly could, if you want to get contrarian elsewhere, that's fine. I think you can get contrarian with the stacks you have.
With the pair. That's, I agree completely with that. And I bet we're on the same person.
Mm-hmm. Probably. Yeah. I think that you probably, I think there'll be a lot of people, on Fitz, obviously. I think he's going to be highly owned. I think you could get slightly more contrarian with John Brown, but you can get really contrarian with Floyd.
I agree, now, except let me give you one piece of knowledge there.
Okay.
He's $4,900 on FanDuel.
That's
it. He's only, so he's $400 above minimum, which means a lot of people can fit him into their lineup. So
yeah, that's true.
I'm really going to be interested on Thursday. He'll be another guy. I'll look at the Thursday lineups and I'll say.
Now you're talking about Floyd.
Michael Floyd, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to look at the Thursday lineups and I'm going to say, all right, how high owned was he? Because I think that he's probably going to be a little under-owned, especially since, you know, he only caught one touchdown instead of three he should have had last week.
Close to catching touchdowns too. Like this is why I do like.
He should have had three last week.
Yeah, like, right. I know, and it's like it. Sometimes it's like the mule kick in the teeth. Like we keep going in that same well. You know, you keep going to check on the donkey, you get kicked in the face. It just feels like that all the time with him.
You're routinely checking on donkeys?
I don't know. I'm just that was a shitty metaphor. But anyway,
I'm just here to treat you, donkey. Why are you kicking me in the teeth?
Hey, donkey.
I'm just trying to give you a vaccine. Donkey? Why are you kicking me?
But the donkey play is obviously it's an industry term. So, but anyway, I will say this on DraftKings. This is the pricing we have for DraftKings. You have $7,400 for Fitz. Brown is at $5,500. Floyd's at $3,200. If we're gonna go to the Monday night,
$200 above minimum. Ugh.
I know. If you go to the Monday night plays. Now again, this is why I like this play, because it's Monday night. It's because if you've built up a really strong roster, the rest of your roster, and you're doing really well, then you go into Monday night with Carson Palmer against a horrible Baltimore secondary and potentially your game winners. And the contrarian play. Now, if you look at Thursday night, you look at the ownership levels, then you can kind of construct around that a little bit. If you have some wiggle room, you can say, well, Floyd's non-existent. Nobody owns him. Then you look at Fitz and Floyd, and you make it work. You can certainly do that. You know, because obviously, if you're looking at the tournaments, again, to the point of if you're not playing the Monday-Thursday game, most of the time you're fading Thursday night football anyway, especially this week, which is just a bad matchup. You're looking at, you know, the ownerships from the FanDuel, you know, Thursday night bomb, and you're taking that information and saying, well, now this is really going to help me, because now I have a really perfect Monday night situation where I can make a late swap. You know, I can wiggle a little bit around there with the rest of my lineups. And you can do that, certainly. So for me, I think that's why I like Floyd, because I think you can certainly make it work, you know, and you can put Brown in there, you know, in that spot and have some room left over and then be able to sort of play and maybe swap out. I mean, it's going to leave you with a little bit of a deficit, but who cares? If you feel like at that point, ownership level is going to be tilting toward Brown or Fitz, then you drop in Floyd, and maybe that's the one that puts you over this week. I mean, it seems like an offense where, you know, remember when Carson Palmer was healthy, he was distributing the football pretty evenly, or at least he was trying to get it to all of his targets, some higher than others. Some weeks were a little bit different. Some guys get a few more targets each week. So there's that possibility. He's going to draw the weakest coverage, obviously. And for me, that's ideal. So, I mean, there's a possibility for me to have a few of those GPPs with a Palmer and Floyd stack for sure, I think.
Well, first things I would say is I don't know if Baltimore has a stronger coverage. And then
I mean, they're all bad, but I mean, there's the stinkiest poo, basically.
Yes, there you go. So, but I agree completely. I will have Michael Floyd shares in a lot of GPP lineups this week. I like him a lot. You know, on the running game, Arizona, it's not a good matchup. Baltimore has been okay against the run, but I mean, you have no idea what's going to happen. David Johnson had, I think, 3 carries last week, and one of them was a red zone carry. Chris Johnson did have a red zone carry, but it was from farther out. As soon as they got inside the 5, they put in David Johnson. Andre Ellington played 9 snaps. So what you have is you have a situation where it's going to be Chris Johnson carrying the ball, except when he gets down to the goal line, and David Johnson's going to steal it. So you're probably not going to get a touchdown from Chris Johnson. And if you are betting on David Johnson, you're betting on a touchdown, and Andre Ellington plays 10 snaps a game. So there's nothing there. From Baltimore, I think if you're betting on Joe Flacco this week, you're pretty much betting on game flow. You know, he's not a guy that – you know, he didn't look good against San Francisco, and that was a matchup that he should have been able to take advantage of. 2 weeks ago, he has a big game, but he had 2 rushing touchdowns. That was it. I mean, it was a fluky rushing touchdown situation. No quarterback has scored more than 20 points against Arizona yet, though they haven't exactly faced murderer's row, but they've still been good. Patrick Peterson is back. I mean, is there anybody in this running game in this passing game that you're super excited to play?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm looking at my notes over here, and I have an X against the Ravens. You know, like just a big red X. Like I don't want any of that action. I just feel like this is really set up for Baltimore to be playing catch up, and potentially a game for Flacco where he could be, you know, really good for the Arizona defense, which is probably too highly priced anyway. For the most part, they generally are, and I generally steer away from them, but I think this is probably a week where Flacco could really turn the ball over, you know, and so I'm kind of avoiding this whole situation.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm especially avoiding the run game. I like Justin Forsett, and Justin Forsett's been.
And I think people will go back. I'm sorry. I think people will go back to Steve Smith again this week, which is a mistake.
See, that's the question I have. That's another ownership question I have about him. He's wide receiver 19. He's 6,900. He has double-digit targets in 3 of 5 games. He's going to be followed by Patrick Peterson. I would be shocked if he's not followed by Patrick Peterson, who's back to playing, you know, good football now that he has his blood sugar under control. I'm probably staying away. The only person I would even consider is Steve Smith, but again, that'll be an ownership question. And then Forsett on the road in a game they're going to lose. No, not happening. Yep. So let's move on to the next one. Atlanta at Tennessee. Atlanta's 4.5-point road favorites. The game total is 48. 88% of the tickets are on Atlanta right now, which should tell you quite a bit. Atlanta's team total is 26.25. Tennessee's team total is 21.75. So the passing game of Atlanta, you know, this is going to be an interesting thing. People, I don't think, recognize or realize how good Tennessee has been against the pass this year and how good their pass rush has been. So you look at Tennessee, you think, oh, bad team, bad defense, and it's a bad run defense. There's zero reason to back off of Devontae Freeman this week.
Right.
Zero reason. Lamar Miller went through him like butter. Devontae Freeman, there's no reason not to have him in your lineups this week, especially since he's cheaper than Adrian Peterson and Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, I know. But the passing game of Atlanta, I think it's a little more interesting. Tennessee's pass defense has been among the better ones in the league. They've been really good in fantasy. In DVOA, Football Outsiders has them as the 6th best pass defense. They've been really good. Now, they're probably going to be without Parrish Cox, who is one of the players that's really helped them. But when I look at this game, I think that this is a game to fade the entire Atlanta passing offense. And I doubt I have any of them in any of my lineups.
I agree with you, and one of the big reasons I know there are people that are on Julio because they really feel like it's a simmering pot. You know, there've been some he's been dinged up, and they feel that you know, the matchup is very, very good for him. And I agree with you. I don't think it's as good as people think, but I know there are people that think it's a great matchup, and they feel like he's due for another big breakout game. At his price, I mean, on DraftKings, he's $500 more than DeAndre Hopkins.
See, he's actually on FanDuel. DeAndre Hopkins is more expensive now, but it's not. It's only by 100, I think. But Julio is wide receiver two now, which good that that's finally happened. But you're right; it's about the same price.
Yeah, on DraftKings, he's so much. You know, Hopkins is so much cheaper. If I'm going to go super chalky, I'm going to go to Hopkins every time over Julio. I mean, I don't care about the ceiling because I mean Hopkins already has that high ceiling and in one of the safest floors of any wide receiver. Because of his targets.
Just as an aside, if you get a chance to watch the Texans-Jacksonville game, just watch what DeAndre Hopkins did to Devon House last week. Just go and watch it.
And they're benching him because of that game.
They had him shadow. I don't know why they had him shadow Hopkins. It was just...
I don't know. It's almost like child abuse. But
it was nasty.
Yeah, it was bad. And I feel bad because... He's actually a good, he's a burgeoning cornerback.
He's good. That's how good Hopkins is.
Hopkins is, right, exactly. And I even tweeted it out today. I said, it just sucks because Gus Bradley's got his head up his ass. Because if he benches this kid, he's going to get obliterated. If you think this bad now, you know, the backup is even worse. So, I mean, it's just going to be a nightmare. But anyway, to get back to Hopkins, I just think he's a better play than Julio. I'm with you 100%. Freeman, Gurley, you know, as your running backs and cash is just why play anybody
it's,
else?
It's
I
mana.
Mean, I got one mana. Other option. I got one other option if you want to go into tournaments. I have one other option at running back that you could pair with Gurley and go a little bit cheaper. But Freeman, just keep rolling. I mean, the price is still, especially in DraftKings, you know, it's still for me. You know, if I'm going to pay up, I'm going to pay up for him because he's just being so heavily utilized in the passing game. That again, safe floor, even without you know a perfect situation at the goal line, and I think he's going to still have those options anyway, and they're going to be able to execute, you know, the run game, and he'll be fine. So you know, again, it's just that safety of that floor for Freeman. He's going to be there every week, and you're kidding yourself if you keep fading. There's going to come a week where there's going to be a really bad matchup, a really difficult matchup, and they're going to just sell out to stop them. And then there's going to be, you know, a bounce back week for, you know, for Julio, whatever. But it hasn't happened yet.
And it's not this week against this team.
It's certainly not this week. So just keep rolling them out. So I'm absolutely with you. As far as the Titans, I don't really like anybody. Do you like anybody for the Titans?
I think there are three contrarian plays.
Let's go. Let's hear it.
Delanie Walker, because Atlanta can't defend tight ends.
That's good.
Dorial Green-Beckham, because Harry Douglas is hurt.
Okay.
And if Harry Douglas doesn't play, he's already seen his share of targets and snaps go up. If Harry Douglas doesn't play, it's even better. And you have to trust Zach Mettenberger, who is going to start. You have to trust him to, you know, push the ball down the field to Dorial Green-Beckham to give Green-Beckham a shot. Now, he throws interceptions because he gives his receivers a shot, but at least Green-Beckham will be able to help. And
right.
then – and I want you – you're sitting down for this, right?
I know what you're going to say. Who
am I going to say?
I know what you're going to say.
Dexter McCluster.
Nice. I knew it. I knew it was coming.
And now let me tell you why.
Tell me why, bro.
Because Tennessee's going to lose this game by a lot.
Okay.
Dexter McCluster is playing the most snaps of any Titans running backs.
Yep.
The Falcons have given up the most receptions to running backs in the league at 58, the most receiving yards to running backs in the league at 466. Dexter McCluster had a red zone look last week that he scored on. In a DraftKings tournament, I think that there's some value in Dexter McCluster. I'll hang up and listen to the answer off air.
Listen, man, if this is your Gary Barnes play this week, man, hey, we should all be paying attention. Because you're right. In DraftKings, hey, maybe he does have some PPR value this week. And, you know, dude, if you get this call, man, you're going to get the props next week for sure at the start. So
yeah, it's one of those things. Take a shot, maybe. But other than those three, and like I said, they're all just contrarian tournament plays. There's nothing here that you want.
Exactly.
The next game is the Jets at the Patriots, a game I think you might have some interest in.
Yes.
And New England is 9-point home favorites. The game total is 48. The public is split on this game. It's about it's about a 50-50, the betting tickets, according to ESPN's Pick Center. So that's an interesting one. New England's team totals 28.5, highest of the week. The New York Jets is 19.5. So I guess there are two things to talk about from the New England perspective. Three things.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with Brady, highest priced quarterback at FanDuel? I imagine he is at DraftKings as well.
Mm-hmm.
To Gronk or not to Gronk?
Mm-hmm.
And who's the running back? And that's, I guess those are the three important questions.
All right. Well, here's the thing. I have not had any shares of Brady as of late, you know, and I'm the biggest Patriot honk, you know. His price is too high. And I think that the matchup set, especially this week, it's a difficult matchup. And I, you know, don't see the point in paying up for a quarterback that's going to have that degree of difficulty. Now, I think he's still going to be pretty highly owned, despite the matchup being difficult. I think people that, now have Brady on the mind. You know,
that's the real question. That's because the matchup, like you said, the matchup. I mean, the New York Jets have been really tough against quarterbacks. The Browns quarterbacks combined for 17 points week one. That would have been the highest total. Luck had 10.4, Bradford at 8.5, Tannehill had 12.3. They have not been giving anything to quarterbacks.
Yeah, no, and they're going to get after Brady too. They're going to throw some heat. I fully expect that they're going to try to play more, you know, sixth offensive lineman type of plays because they have Sheldon Richardson back, so they're going to get some internal pressure on Brady. They're going to have to really play some strong offensive line to keep Brady clean in this game. So I'm fading Brady. I will say Gronkowski. I'll have some shares. I think we know who we're going to have, and we'll talk about that later, who we're going to have at, you know, in our cash game lineups for a tight end, but everybody knows that answer anyway. But I think I'll have some of Gronk because I do think that we're going to see Revis on Edelman, so I'm definitely fading Edelman. I'm not touching him at all.
Wide receiver 9 on FanDuel with Revis on him. No,
yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I think Amendola has some value, but I'm still kind of, you know, I could see this where just Brady just looks at the entire field and just kind of, you know, everybody comes away with a small slice of the pie, and that just kind of worries me. You know, I told everybody last week on this podcast, Ray, that I didn't like the Patriots last week, and they kind of underwhelmed. You know, as a whole, you know, there weren't individual plays that were great. And I think that aside from Blunt, and I warned that the whole Lewis Blunt thing could go awry, and it did, and it was more favorable to Blunt.
But he had a receiving touchdown. That's so nonsense.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, just in terms of.
I'm still bitter about
it. Even though to support, it actually supports my argument that it was sort of fluky. But again, it wasn't shaping up to be one or the other. And I still feel I'm concerned about Lewis. And I hear things from people in New England about Lewis that he's still playing with some pain. That worries me. But I still think he has enough value in the passing game. I think he'll be utilized probably a little bit more in this one. I think it sets up poorly for Blunt in this matchup. He's a downhill player. And I think with Richardson back, who's terrific against the run. I mean, terrific. He's one of the better run-stopping defensive linemen in the league. So I think it sets up poorly for him now that they have him back. It solidifies that interior defensive line. It's not good for Blunt. So I do think Lewis has more value. His pricing is still kind of where I don't want to touch him, though. You know, especially now the way it's kind of moving. It's moving sort of away from him being a sure thing, him being sort of a not-so-sure thing. So while I say, again, from this the whole big picture, I want a little piece of Gronk, maybe, you know, small shares of him, especially when I look at the ownership. I think that the ownership is still going to be pretty high, but I think the ownership for Gates will be higher. And if Gronk starts to slide, I think last week he was kind of pretty low owned, but it was appropriate. And I think this week that may happen again where his value, you know, the ownership drops a little bit and then maybe his value is recouped a little bit, because I do think that his coverage, they're going to commit some coverage to him, but I think Edelman's going to really be the focus with Revis, so the lesser coverage will be Gronk's way, where he can capitalize. And I think I did say on Coach Esser's podcast, by the way, check him out too, guys, on iTunes, Fantasy Coach. He's got a great podcast. I was on his podcast, and I talked about how I thought that Gronkowski looked a little slow out of his breaks last week. And I don't know if he's injured, and that concerns me a little bit. So that's kind of why, too, I don't have a lot of shares of him because his price is still high, and I'm concerned about his health. But I do think he can get over in this game. I think the matchup will be, you know, plus for him because of the coverage. But your blind dart is Amendola. I think his snaps went up, and I think that he'll probably have the best matchup in this situation. And I think he could have another good game this week, but I just don't like the way it's setting up, Ray. I mean, it's just sort of ambiguous, and I kind of fading most of these guys, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would say one thing about Gronk. It's kind of an interesting situation with Todd Bowles because his defenses in Arizona were really susceptible to the pass.
To tight end.
Because they finished as the worst defense against tight ends, one of his years the fifth worst as the other. And now he leaves, he comes to New York, and it's all of a sudden Arizona's is the best fantasy defense against tight ends. So,
right.
So, you know, the personnel hasn't changed that much. So when you look at it and say, well, what's he doing? But then you come and look in New York, and in New York, they've been really good against the tight end. They have not given up more than 39 receiving yards to a tight end this year. And that list includes Gary Barnage, Zach Ertz, and Jordan Cameron. So it's not like they're facing bottom barrel guys. So,
right, right.
So it's kind of like what's real about that? Is this defense good against tight ends? And, you know, there might just be a thing where no defense is good or bad against tight ends. It's just kind of one of those things. And so right. That's something to consider as well. But I do think it's kind of interesting. And so I'm saying probably fading Gronk most of the time, maybe have a little piece of him, but that's about it. I do quite like a couple plays for the Jets, all from a tournament perspective. Mm-hmm. But I do think that this could be a week for Ryan Fitzpatrick stack, especially if you match him up with either Marshall or Decker, because I think that both of those guys are really tough matchups for the secondary of New England, which is all small. I mean, everybody on that every person I think of that secondary is small, especially you're going to get, I believe, Logan Ryan in the slot against Eric Decker.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really tough matchup for him. Even if Malcolm Butler follows around Brandon Marshall, Malcolm Butler is 5'11", 190, and he's going to have to defend Brandon Marshall. So I think that there's some joy that can be found in that passing game. What do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I'm probably just because of pricing, I'm probably on Decker more.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
and he's every game that he's played, he's found the end zone. And you know, we know that even if this is a game where it gets, you know, the flow is in New England's favor and they have a lead, which I think it's going to be a pretty close game. But if there is a situation where this at home, they have a lead, the garbage time points to Decker for me. And I love that. His pricing, he's the other guy we talked about. One of the other guys, you know, the Jacksonville wide receivers to another guys that sort of fit that mold too, where the pricing hasn't really caught up to the production for somebody like Decker. He's still very, very cheap. He's still only 5,300 on DraftKings. So for me, matchup wise, the potential for them to be playing catch up in garbage time, I love Decker. I mean, I the last couple of weeks I've tried to fit him in my lineup, and he always does, and it always pays off for me. He always pays off, ROI. So certainly I agree with you on Decker. I'm a little bit less with Marshall, but I do think you're right in the matchup. I still think he can win. But I'll say this. Butler's been better the last several weeks. He's played a lot better. The secondary's played a lot better.
He got praise from Bill Belichick, which is in the media, which, I mean, that
right.
that's I, saying
I,
something.
I do think Marshall – can have a good game, but also I've noticed a couple of weeks, and again, this is just me observational you know, just looking at the two sides, Marshall's had, you know, bobbled a bunch of, you know, passes recently, had some ripped from his hands, kind of like plays into the style of Butler. And there's potential there just because of the way Fitzpatrick throws the football. And I love, listen, I love Fitzmagic. I'm all over him too. I've played him in cash and tournaments. And, you know, I think that there's potential there for Butler to kind of jump a route and steal one from him. So I think that there is an opportunity there, but also think that because of the matchup, I think, you know, Fitzpatrick will be looking toward Decker, you know, the better of the two matchups. So, and he generally, like we've talked about this before, wherever he goes, he feeds one or two guys. That's it. He's not really going beyond that. And they stick to the formula, the run game, pound Ivory, and then look for the two main targets for the most part. And everybody else kind of gets the scraps. So I think I like Decker of the three, actually.
And that stack, if you want to stack in a tournament, Fitzpatrick.
There you go.
If you want to stack Fitzpatrick and Eric Decker on FanDuel, it only costs you 13.3.
That's beautiful.
Which is, you know, leaves you a ton of room to fit Devontae Freeman in there or whoever else, you know, the higher owned guys. So I think it's a good matchup. On Ivory, I'm going to continue to say this because I think I'm right. I don't think the New England run defense is good, but I don't think it matters because I don't know what team is going to be in the game flow situation to give their running backs enough look for it to matter.
Totally agree. That's my feeling. And his price is good. Still very, very good. But I agree with you. I think the game, because he's not heavily involved in the passing game and because it's so game flow dependent or game script dependent, when the flow gets out of control for you know, and the opportunity isn't there for him to just grind out a game, then it's just going to hurt. But I do think New England also had some injuries in the linebacker crew. If you know, Hightower's back this week, and I think he will be, that changes things a little bit. New England will be less susceptible to the run. And again, I totally agree with you. I think if they have a lead, then it just sort of takes it out of Ivory's hands a little bit. I mean, they're going to have to throw. They have to stand back there. And I think they will. I don't think they'll be able to. So it doesn't really hurt them that much. I think this is a game where they could kind of keep up for the most part. So it'll be a fun game. I think there'll be some points scored in this one, man, for sure.
And one little extra tidbit here. You know, New England has a really good pass rush, but the Jets have the best adjusted sack rate against. So they've been protecting him. So it's going to be an interesting game. I agree with you.
And Fitz can move too, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know,
because he's magic.
He's Fitz magic, baby.
So he can move. So the next game, the final game, is Oakland at San Diego. San Diego 4-point home favorites. The game total is 47. 75% of the tickets on San Diego, but the number staying firm, which is kind of interesting, but it's, you know, it's at 4 points. If you're going to move it, you just move. There's no value. 5 is a dead number. So they move it. Who cares? So it's kind of one of those things. San Diego's got a team total, has a team total of 25.5. Oakland has a team total of 21.5. You know, my biggest decision this week, I think, will be whether or not to play Phillip Rivers or Carson Palmer in my cash. Phillip Rivers is quarterback 9 at FanDuel. He costs $8,000. He's averaging 25 points a game the last 3 weeks. He gets Oakland this week.
Mm.
That's tough to pass up in cash, especially when you can match him with the best tight end play in Antonio Gates. So that's going to be a big decision for me. What are you thinking of between Palmer and Rivers?
I think it's a coin flip. I think it just depends on the ownership. I think when we know what the ownership's going to be, I think you kind of move along those lines. I think both will be pretty highly owned. I think there's probably some argument to say that maybe still that Rivers will be a little bit more highly owned than Palmer. I know
I agree with that completely because of just, I mean, he just threw for 500 yards.
Yeah, and the perception too. I think, you know, this is one of those games where I think the public plays when, and I say that by meaning people that are kind of new to daily will come in and think Oakland and automatically, you know, lean to Rivers. I think that, again, you know, new players, and this isn't a knock on people that, you know, there's a faction of daily fantasy players that see a commercial and they'll play and they see names and they think a certain thing when they haven't really watched football all that much. And some of that action will be on, because, you know, Ray, we've seen people play people that are on IR, for Christ's sakes. I mean, that just, it happens. So I think some of that action will be, you know, look at, they'll see the Ravens and think, whoa, they're a tough defense, aren't they? And not move away from Carson Palmer. So I think some of those numbers kind of ebb and flow a little bit. And I think some of them could be leaning more toward Rivers. So, I do think that depending on what the ownership is, that will probably sway me. But I think both are in play. I mean, I think you can go hedge and go 50-50 with either or. And I don't think you really can go wrong. I think, you know, for me, Gates obviously is our cash tight end. We know, aside from the Owen Daniels dad runner side part, that's a little hat tip to Adam Levitan, dad runner. I mean, aside from that blow up where he didn't hold up his end of the bargain of gashing the Oakland defense, Gates is a different animal. I mean, he has the trust of his quarterback. He's going to be fed. We know that. And this is just a pristine, perfect matchup for a tight end, and he's going to exploit it. So this could be another 2-touchdown game for Gates very, very easily. Love that matchup. I think we probably don't have a lot of faith right now in the San Diego running game. Allen is probably dependent on how he's feeling health-wise. I think a little dinged up right now, or...
Yeah, he didn't practice today. Okay. And so they, you know, they said it's a hip flexor. That's the type of injury that can kind of take away some of your explosion. I believe that's the same injury that Ray Rice had that last year where he just kind of stopped it. So I'm worried about Keenan Allen, which sucks because he was unbelievable against Green Bay before the injury.
I mean, he was fed. Now, that makes it a little bit more like sort of a where does it go from there? Where do the targets go?
I have a candidate for you.
Is it Mr. Inman?
It is not. Although I do like Inman.
Yeah, and
if Keenan Allen weren't to play, I'd like him. And Stevie Johnson, another thing we have to say, Stevie Johnson's probably back this week. He practiced on Wednesday. Okay. My candidate is actually Ladarius Green.
Nice. I like that.
And I think that he's a good kind of, because like you said, Antonio Gates is going to be owned everywhere. I think Ladarius Green's a good kind of GPP way into this passing game.
Yeah, I kind of agree. And they're on the field a lot more together now. They're going a lot more heavy, two tight end sets.
Yeah, Ladarius Green's played 65% of the snaps the last 2 weeks, has 9 targets and 3 red zone targets. So it's not like he's disappeared from the offense. Yeah. And that was with Keenan Allen. Now, like I said, Stevie Johnson coming back is a little bit of a concern, but it's something to keep in mind.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously we're going to pay attention to how this sets up, and, you know, we'll kind of monitor the practice schedule of everyone and see how this goes up to game time. But yeah, obviously those plays are something to think about. On the Oakland side, listen, San Diego is legit. Jason Verrett is legit. I mean, he's probably one of the few cornerbacks that we can say right now is a kind of a little bit of a matchup tilt. And so it's hard to really love somebody like Cooper who's going to draw him in the matchup. I for me, this one play, and I think he's pretty safe because I don't think that we have any concerns about anybody like Kalu eating into his you know, passing down reps or anything. But I like Latavius Murray at 6,100 this week. I think it just sets up for him. I realize that the game could kind of tilt a little bit, but I think in games where the script isn't where they can just pound the football, he does get more reps in the passing game. He gets involved a little bit more. I do think they'll feed him in this game. You know, there are better plays, like you were talking about before. I'd rather have Gurley and a Freeman matchup. But if you want to go a little contrarian, I think you can go with Murray and, you know, Freeman or Murray and Gurley and go with that kind of a pairing and mix it up a little bit. But I do like him this week. What do you think about Murray this week?
I agree. I like him. I would say that I think there's more risk than maybe you do.
I agree.
Because, I mean, he was benched. They can say what they want, but he was benched in the second half of both of the games before the bye. Okay. I think a little bit of that was the shoulder injury. Yep. And so
he's had time off to heal. So
exactly. And so that makes me feel better about it. But like you said, I don't think game flow is a particularly big concern. It's a bigger concern now than it was week one for sure. I mean, week one, he had 7 targets because they had nobody else. Right. Now that Helu has come in, he caught a touchdown pass. He showed pretty well. Maybe there's more of a game flow concern than there was at the beginning of the season, but I still don't think the game flow concern is that big as long as he's healthy and can catch the ball, which is why he was benched in the first place, because he had a pass bounce literally right off his shoulder pads into the arms of a defender, and then he fumbled and all that stuff. So so as long as he's healthy and his shoulder's good and he can actually catch the ball, I don't think game flow is too terribly big of a concern. I think you're getting a bit of a discount on even on FanDuel. He's running back 14, he's 7,000.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big discount. I agree with you, he might be low owned. So yeah, in a tournament I like him. I will probably stay away in cash.
But no, absolutely
in
cash,
a tournament, yep. I like him. And then you mentioned the passing game. I don't think you mentioned Verrett. I imagine he shadows. I don't think you're getting a big enough discount on Cooper at wide receiver 14, 7,300 to really risk it. Yeah. And then Derek Carr, you are getting a big discount on. He's only 6,700 at FanDuel. But then, you know, who do you match him with? Their tight ends are terrible. You don't want any part of Michael Crabtree, probably.
Yeah. This could very well be a route.
Yeah. So I don't know where to go with him. So I do think there's some value on Carr, but I don't know who you match him with.
Yeah.
And so that kind of limits him a little bit. Mm-hmm. But all right, let's get on to my favorite segment of the podcast. Some stacks on stacks on stacks on racks on stacks. And my first stack that I think I'll start with is my favorite of the week. And that is Mr. Todd Gurley, who we've talked about ad nauseum already, who I think is the best play on the board at DraftKings and probably FanDuel's too. And the Rams defense and special teams. Cleveland's run defense is trash. It's just trash. That's the answer. And then McCown, you know, even though McCown's been playing well from a fantasy perspective, he still turns the ball over. He's fumbled 4 times. He threw 2 picks last week. So there's some room here for St. Louis to have some success at home. They're pretty big favorites at home. I am all in on a Gurley St. Louis Rams defense stack.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love that one. I want to add a few more things to that. We talked about this before. You know, in a matchup, even if they're able to score, like we get a couple of, you know, Gary Barnage touchdowns or whatever. And they actually Rams have been pretty good against tight ends. But even in a situation like that, it's not necessarily about the points scored. We talk about that week to week. That's why we're able to get these cheap defenses week to week. I've used Tampa Bay, San Francisco recently. And they've been great. I mean, they've been cheap, almost minimum on DraftKings. Because it's about sacks. It's about forced fumbles.
Sacks, turnovers, touchdowns.
Points don't matter. Don't obsess about shutouts, because they don't happen that often. And they rarely happen these days. So worry about turnovers. And that's what you really should be focusing on. You know, opportunistic defenses. And this is an opportunistic defense that's going to be able to get to the quarterback and force fumbles, and they're going to rack up some points for you. So I absolutely agree with you. I think that's actually one of my stacks as well. My other stack is, you know, it's a what if Roethlisberger plays this week. Okay. And it's shaping up to maybe potentially for him to play this week. I know
I kind of like his chances. All the talk before today, Wednesday, we recorded on Wednesday, was about, oh, well, we'll figure out on Wednesday. And he came out of Wednesday's practice saying he felt good. And if you listen to a radio interview from earlier in the week, he said it was all going to be about how he feels. So if he says he felt good after practice, that gives me a lot of hope that he's going to play this week.
Exactly. Now here's my stacks, okay? Now, if he plays, obviously, I think a lot of the heat will be back on Martavis Bryant. He's super cheap. And I'll still play some Martavis Bryant. I think that, you know, he'll be targeted, but squeaky wheel. All I saw in that game was Antonio Brown throwing his hands up before Michael Vick got hurt, throwing his hands up like, dude, I'm here, not over there. You know, like, I'm open. And
I was doing the same thing when I'm watching it, saying, throw the ball, Michael Vick. So right. I can't imagine Antonio Brown.
And you, it was just a squeaky wheel, and I know we hate the narrative, but it matters in this case because we know once Roethlisberger's back, he's going to feed the binky, and the binky is Antonio Brown. Now, it's a totally different setup when he's in the game. He's going to feed his number one. I still think, obviously, Bryant's going to have value, but it's sort of that, you know, it's red zone only contingent value. I think with Jones, it fits better for what Martavis Bryant does because Jones doesn't have great intermediate touch. He's going to, like, launch it deep, and he's a perfect fit for what Bryant does. So if it's Jones, obviously I like to have a piece of Bryant in my lineup, you know, especially tournaments and cash, because you can fit him in there. But if Ben's back, I think a lot of the public sentiment will still be off of Brown a little bit. They'll be nervous about playing him still and maybe leaning toward a little bit more towards the recency bias of Bryant, and kind of makes him sort of a contrarian play, even though his price is a little higher. I think a lot of the heat will be on some of the other guys we just talked about. I mean, obviously Hopkins is a must play anyway, but you know, with Julio and some of those other guys, I think some people will be chasing the Calvin points as well. You know, why not play Antonio Brown if Ben's back? I think there's a potential for him to just have a huge target game and blow up. So, you know, I just think that the smart money will be on him if Ben is full go on Friday and ready to go. I think that's somebody that I want to try to fit into some of my tournament plays.
Yeah, I agree with that. We've already talked about my other two stacks, Fitz Magic and Decker and Carson Palmer and Floyd are two I like. But there's as we move into kind of the next and final segment, contrarian, there is a contrarian stack that I like. I think it's going to be contrarian. This is one that I have a hard time with. You know, people have refused to buy Blake Bortles as a fantasy player. You know, as a real NFL player, still terrible. But people have refused to buy him as a fantasy play. I'm not sure why. And I think that they'll keep refusing to buy him this week, and I will love to use him this week against Buffalo. You know, it's going to be weird because it's an early game, and so you might have to have him in some of the different formats. But I love Blake Bortles this week. I love matching him with Julius Thomas, who practice in full, so there's no injury concerns. The Bills are much better at defending the perimeter than they are at the middle of the field. They've actually been kind of not good against tight ends. Thomas had 13 targets and was basically the only player other than Allen Robinson to get targets before Allen Robinson got hurt. Those are going to be their two guys. Thomas has a better matchup. I will definitely have Blake Bortles and Thomas in any formats that allow me to play them.
Nice. I like that. Into that same game, actually, some buzz about Tyrod practicing. Is that correct?
He took the first rep in practice today, but he did that last week. But it does sound like he actually has a chance to play this week, where last week you could tell that it was all just bluster and nonsense. Yep. This week it kind of sounds like he has a chance.
Yep, and you know, the receiving corps is dinged up, so I love Charles Clay if he's back. I think that's his guy.
Even if it's E.J. Manuel, I think I love Charles Clay because who else are they going to throw to?
Exactly, but I mean, I especially like it if it's Tyrod. Yeah, absolutely. At 4,300, he's probably that play that's going to be much lesser owned than Gronk and Gates. And you know, you can certainly fit into your lineup a lot better. But one of my contrarian plays, we talked about, obviously the chalky defense, which we both love. And I certainly for cash, we're going to have the Rams, and we love that Rams girly stack, but Washington defense at home versus Tampa Bay, $2,500 on DraftKings.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Tell it like it is.
Tell it like it is, because we know they're going to be pretty good against the run. Okay, we know that they are a team that can be pretty efficient against the run. We know there are going to be some points scored, but Jameis is going to make mistakes. I mean, he's going to get sacked. He's going to throw interceptions. And we know that they can get after the quarterback. So I love the Washington D. Again, I don't think everybody's probably going to be on the Rams. I think that's it's going to be pretty high ownership. I think some of the other higher price ones, a lot of people will be on those as well. They're just sort of in that mix where every week I just sort of like have that John Nash feeling, Ray, you know, where it lights up, you know, in the beautiful mind, we just, the thing lights up and everything starts to equate to you in your head. To me, Washington just seems like that play, that perfect play where there's going to be a lot of turnovers in this game, a lot of mental mistakes from Winston. So I will say this, I do also like Vincent Jackson, even though I do like the Washington defense. I think Jackson will sort of becomes a de facto every other week play. And I used to talk about this on our old podcast, that Jackson is somebody that, you know, every other week he sort of seems to come to the surface again. I think that he's another one of my contrarian plays. I think that Jameis will target him more than Evans because I think, or at least he'll have a more efficient game. I really do think that Evans is sort of, he still hasn't figured it out yet. You know, he sort of has the Bambi legs and it's not quite coming together for him. So I think Jackson actually is somebody that you could fit for 5,300. You could on DraftKings, you could slide into that lineup. I think he's going to be really low owned this week. He kind of had a down game after having a big game the previous week. So I think there's possibility for him to sort of have another big week this week. We know Washington can be thrown on, but they're a little bit tougher against the run. So I think that there's an opportunity, even in a situation if they're playing from behind, that you know that they'll certainly be able to capitalize there. So again, it's not about how many points are scored on the defense; it's about you know about the turnovers. And I do think it's an opportunity for you to actually play Vincent Jackson, yet still play the Washington defense because we think that. You know, there's certainly going to be some turnovers from Jameis Winston. What do you think?
I agree completely. And this is what I'll just add stats to this. So Jameis Winston has had two games where he's had less than 21 attempts. He had one with 21 and one with 19. He did not throw a single interception in those games. He's had three games where he's had over 33 attempts and he has thrown all of his interceptions. So all seven of them in those games.
Yep.
And he has a 52% completion percentage in those games. So mm-hmm. It's pretty clear what you have to do to Tampa Bay, force Jameis Winston to throw.
Yeah.
And Washington has the defensive pieces to take away the running game.
Yep.
So if you know that you have to force a quarterback to throw and you can take away the running game, that's good news for your defense. Even though their secondary is banged up and was terrible to begin with,
yep.
You know they can get sacks. They do have a pretty decent pass rush. They can get sacks and they can force some turnovers. So I'm even if they give up, you know, 24 points, who
yeah,
cares?
So that's what I was thinking.
Exactly. So that's it. My last contrarian play, we've already talked about Dorial Green-Beckham. I'm just going to hit it again. He had six targets last week. He played the most snaps of the year. Harry Douglas is hurt and terrible, has a 3.5 yards per target, not for reception. Three and a half yards per target. It's almost worse with the receptions. It's terrible. He doesn't need to be playing, and maybe this is a good chance to get Dorial Green-Beckham in the lineup. So I like him a lot. You got any other guys?
That's it, man. That wraps it up for me.
All right, so that's it for us this week. Thanks for listening. As always, you can go and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher and Tuned In. Make sure to rate and review the podcast wherever you find it. That helps people find us, helps grow the show, and we certainly appreciate that. You can follow the podcast on Twitter. It's at Rummy and Ray. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at RM Summerlin. You can follow him on Twitter. He's at Rumford Johnny. And as always, if you hear someone dropping knowledge, what should you do, Hank Hill?
Pick it up and also pick up propane and propane accessories.
Damn it, Bobby.